10.
You killed it?
Yes, said Logan, gazing at the dirt floor, his mind somewhere else.
You're sure?
Logan looked up out of his reverie.
What?
I need you to be sure, Abaddon said.
You killed it?
Yes. Logan was sitting on a crude hardwood stool in one of the longhouses in Kashiri. Night had fallen outside, bringing with it a keening, malevolent wind that shrieked around the gorge and the Whisperhead peaks. A dozen oil lamps lit the place with a feeble, ochre glow.
We killed it. Nero and I together, with our bolters. It took 90 rounds at full auto. It burst and burned, and we used a flamer to cremate all that remained.
Abaddon nodded.
How many people know about that last act?
Myself,
Nero, Cinderman, and the Remembrance of Keela. We cut the thing down just before it bit her in half. Everyone else who saw it is dead.
What have you said?
Nothing, Ezekiel.
That's good.
I've said nothing because I don't know what to say.
Abaddon scooped up another stool and brought it over to sit down, facing Logan. Both were in full plate, their helms removed. Abaddon hunched his head low to catch Logan's eyes.
I'm proud of you, Gavir.
You hear me?
You dealt with this well.
What did I deal with?
Logan asked, somberly.
The situation.
Tell me,
before Jubal rose again,
who knew of the murders?
More. Those of Breakspur that survived. All of my officers. I wanted their advice.
I'll speak to them, Abaddon muttered. This mustn't get out.
Our line will be as you set it. Victory, splendid but unexceptional. The 10th crushed the insurgents, though losses were taken in 2 squads. But that is war. We expect casualties. The insurgents fought bitterly and formidably to the last. Hellebore and Breakspur bore the brunt of their rage, but 6319 is advanced to full compliance. Glory the 10th, and the Lunar Wolves, glory the Warmaster. The rest will remain a matter of confidence within the inner circle. Can Cinderman be trusted to keep this close?
Of course, though he is very shaken.
And the Remembrancer? Keena, was it?
Keela. Euphrati Keela.
She's in shock.
I don't know her. I don't know what she'll do. But she has no idea what it was that attacked her. I told her it was a wild beast. She didn't see Jubal change. She doesn't know it was him.
Well, that's something. I'll place an injunction on her, if necessary.
Perhaps a word will be sufficient.
I'll repeat the wild beast story and tell her we're keeping the matter confidential for morale's sake. The Remembrancers must be kept away from this.
2 of them died.
Abaddon got up.
A tragic mishap during deployment. A landing accident. They knew the risks they were taking. It will be just a footnote blemish to an otherwise exemplary undertaking.
Logan looked up at the first captain.
Are we trying to forget this even happened, Ezekiel? For I cannot, and I will not.
I'm saying this is a military incident, and will remain restricted. It's a matter of security and morale, Garville. You are disturbed, I can see that plainly. Think what needless trauma this would cause if it got out. It would ruin confidence, break the spirit of the expedition, tarnish the entire crusade, not to mention the unimpeachable reputation of the Legion.
The longhouse door banged open, and the gale squealed in for a moment before the door closed again. Logan didn't look up. He was expecting Vipers back at any time with the muster reports.
Leave us, Ezekiel,
a voice said. It wasn't Vipers. Horus was not wearing his armor. He was dressed in simple foul-weather clothes, a mail shirt and a cloak of furs. Abaddon bowed his head and quickly left the longhouse. Logan had risen to his feet.
Sit, Gavir,
Horus said softly.
Sit down. Make no ceremony to me.
Loken slowly sat back down, and the War Master knelt beside him. He was so immensely made that, kneeling, his head was on a level with Loken's. He plucked off his black leather gloves and placed his bare left hand on Loken's shoulder.
"I want you to let go of your troubles, my son," he said. "I try, sir, but they will not leave me alone."
Horus nodded.
"I understand." "I have made a failure of this undertaking, sir," Loken said. "Ezekiel says we will put a brave face on it for appearance's sake. But even if these events remain secret, I will bear the shame of failing you."
"And how did you do that?"
"Men died. A brother turned upon his own. Such a manifest sin. Such a crime. You charged me to take this seat of resistance, and I have made such a mess of it that you have been forced to come here in person to—"
"Hush,"
Horus whispered. He reached out and unfixed Loken's tattered oath of moment from his shoulder plate.
"Do you, Garvil Loken, accept your role in this?"
the War Master read out.
"Do you promise to lead your men into the zone of war and conduct them to glory, no matter the ferocity or ingenuity of the foe? Do you swear to crush the insurgents of 6319, despite all they might throw at you? Do you pledge to do honor to the 16th Legion and the Emperor?"
"Fine words," Loken said.
"They are indeed. I wrote them. Well, did you, Garvil?"
"Did I what, sir?"
"Did you crush the insurgents of 6319, despite all they threw at you?"
"Well, yes."
"And did you lead your men into the zone of war and conduct them to glory, no matter the ferocity or ingenuity of the foe?"
"Yes."
"Then I can't see how you failed in any way, my son. Consider that last phrase particularly. No matter the ferocity or ingenuity of the foe. When poor Jubal turned, did you give up? Did you flee? Did you cast away your courage? Or did you fight against his insanity and his crime, despite your wonder at it?"
"I fought, sir," Loken said.
"Throne of Earth, yes, you did. Yes, you did, Loken. You fought. Cast shame out. I will not have it. You served me well today, my son, and I am only sorry that the extent of your service cannot be more widely proclaimed."
Loken started to reply, but fell silent instead. Horus rose to his feet and began to pace about the room. He found a bottle of wine amongst the clutter on a wall dresser and poured himself a glass.
"I spoke to Kirill Sinderman," he said,
and took a sip of the wine. He nodded to himself before continuing, as if surprised at its quality.
"Poor Kirill. Such a terrible thing to endure. He's even speaking of spirits, you know. Sinderman, the arch-prophet of secular truth, speaking of spirits. I put him right, naturally. He mentioned spirits were a concern of yours, too."
"Kirill convinced me it was a plague at first, but I saw a spirit, a demon, take hold of Xavier Jubal and remake his flesh into the form of a monster. I saw a demon take hold of Jubal's soul and turn him against his own kind."
"No, you didn't," Horus said.
"Sir?"
Horus smiled.
"Allow me to illuminate you. I'll tell you what you saw, Garvil. It is a secret thing, known to a very few, though the Emperor, beloved of all, knows more than any of us. A secret, Garvil, more than any other secret we are keeping today. Can you keep it? I'll share it, for it will soothe your mind, but I need you to keep it solemnly."
"I will,"
Loken said. The War Master took another sip.
"It was the warp, Garvil."
"The warp?"
"Of course it was. We know the power of the warp and the chaos it contains. We've seen it change men. We've seen the wretched things that infest its dark dimensions. I know you have. On Eridas, on Syrinx, on the bloody coast of Tassilon, there are entities in the warp that we might easily mistake for demons.
Sir, I... Loken began. I have been trained in the study of the warp. I am well prepared to face its horrors. I have fought the foul things that pour forth from the gates of the Empyrean. And yes, the warp can seep into a man and transmute him. I have seen this happen, but only in Psychers. It is the risk they take, not in Astartes.
Do you understand the full mechanism of the warp, Garviu?
Horus asked. He raised the glass to the nearest light to examine the color of the wine.
No, sir. I don't pretend to.
Neither do I, my son. Neither does the Emperor, beloved by all. Not entirely. It pains me to admit that, but it is the truth, and we deal in truths above all else. The warp is a vital tool to us, a means of communication and transport. Without it there would be no Imperium of Man, for there would be no quick bridges between the stars. We use it, and we harness it, but we have no absolute control over it. It is a wild thing that tolerates our presence, but brooks no mastery. There is power in the warp. Fundamental power. Not good, nor evil, but elemental, an anathema to us. It is a tool we use at our own risk.
The War Master finished his glass and set it down.
Spirits. Demons. Those words imply a greater power, a fiendish intellect, and a purpose. An evil archetype with cosmic schemes and stratagems. They imply a god or gods at work behind the scenes. They imply the very supernatural state that we have taken great pains, through the light of science, to shake off. They imply sorcery and a palpable evil.
He looked across at Loken.
Spirits. Demons. The supernatural. Sorcery. These are words we have allowed to fall out of use, for we dislike the connotations. But they are just words. What you saw today, call it a spirit, call it a demon. The words serve well enough. Using them does not deny the clinical truth of the universe as man understands it. There can be demons in a secular cosmos, Garviel, just so long as we understand the use of the word.
Meaning the warp.
Meaning the warp. Why coin new terms for its horrors when we have a bounty of old words that might suit us just as well? We use the words alien and xenos to describe the inhuman filth we encounter in some locales. The creatures of the warp are just aliens, too. But they are not life forms as we understand the term. They are not organic. They are extra-dimensional. And they influence our reality in ways that seem sorcerous to us. Supernatural, if you will. So, let's use all those lost words for them. Demons. Spirits. Possessors. Changelings. All we need to remember is that there are no gods out there in the darkness. No great demons and ministers of evil. There is no fundamental, immutable evil in the cosmos. It is too large and sterile for such melodrama. There are simply inhuman things that oppose us, things we were created to battle and destroy. Orcs, Gaikon, Tushepta, Kylikid, Eldar, Jokero, and the creatures of the warp, which are stranger than all. For they exhibit powers that are bizarre to us because of the otherness of their nature.
Loken rose to his feet. He looked around the lamp-lit room and heard the moaning of the mountain wind outside.
I have seen Psychers taken by the warp, sir, he said. I have seen them change and bloat in corruption. But I have never seen a sound man taken. I have never seen an Astartes so abused.
It happens.
Horus replied. He grinned.
Does that shock you?
I'm sorry.
We keep it quiet. The warp can get into anything, if it so pleases. Today was a particular triumph for its ways. These mountains are not haunted, as the myths report. But the warp is close to the surface here. That fact alone has given rise to the myths. Men have always found techniques to control the warp, and the folk here have done precisely that. They let the warp loose upon you today, and brave Jubal paid the price.
Why him?
Why not him? He was angry at you for overlooking him, and his anger made him vulnerable. The tendrils of the warp are always eager to exploit such chinks in the mind. I imagine the insurgents hoped that scores of your men would fall under the power they had let loose. But Tenth Company had more resolve than that. Samus was just a voice from the chaotic realm that briefly anchored itself to Jubal's flesh. You dealt with it well. It could have been far worse.
You're sure of this, sir?
Horus grinned again. The sight of that grin filled Loken with sudden warmth. Ing Mei Sing, mistress of astropaths, informed me of a rapid warp spike in this region just after you disembarked. The data is solid and substantive. The locals use their limited knowledge of the warp, which they probably understood as magic, to unleash the horror of the Imperium upon you as a weapon.
Why have we been told so little about the warp, sir? Loken asked. He looked directly into Horus's wide-set eyes as he asked the question.
Because so little is known,
the War Master replied.
Do you know why I am War Master, my son?
Because you are the most worthy, sir.
Horus laughed, and, pouring another glass of wine, shook his head.
I am War Master, Gavio, because the Emperor is busy. He has not retired to Terra because he is weary of the Crusade. He has gone there because he has more important work to do.
More important than the Crusade? Loken asked.
Horus nodded.
So he said to me. After Ulanor, he believed the time had come when he could leave the crusading work in the hands of the Primarchs, so that he might be freed to undertake a still higher calling.
Which is?
Loken waited for an answer, expecting some transcendent truth. What the War Master said was,
I don't know. He didn't tell me. He hasn't told anyone.
Horus paused. For what seemed like an age, the wind banged against the longhouse shutters.
Not even me,
Horus whispered. Loken sensed a terrible hurt in his commander. A wounded pride that he, even he, had not been worthy enough to know this secret. In a second, the War Master was smiling at Loken again, his dark mood forgotten.
He didn't want to burden me,
he said briskly,
but I'm not a fool. I can speculate. As I said, the Imperium would not exist but for the warp. We are obliged to use it, but we know perilously little about it. I believe that I am War Master because the Emperor is occupied in unlocking its secrets. He has committed his great mind to the ultimate mastery of the warp for the good of mankind. He has realized that without final and full understanding of the Immaterium, we will founder and fall, no matter how many worlds we conquer.
What if he fails? Loken asked.
He won't,
the War Master replied bluntly.
What if we fail?
We won't,
Horus said,
because we are his true servants and sons, because we cannot fail him.
He looked at his half-drunk glass and put it aside.
I came here looking for spirits,
he joked,
and all I find is wine. There's a lesson for you.
Trudging, unspeaking, the warriors of Tenth Company clambered from the cooling stormbirds and streamed away across the embarkation deck towards their barracks. There was no sound save for the clink of their armor and the clank of their feet. In their midst, brothers carried the biers on which the dead of Breakspur lay, shrouded in legion banners. Four of them carried Flora and Van Krasten, too, though no formal flags draped the coffins of the dead remembrancers. The bell of return rang out across the vast deck. The men made the sign of the Aquila and pulled off their helms. Loken wandered away towards his arming chamber, calling for the service of his artificers. He carried his left shoulder guard in his hands, Jubal's sword still stuck fast through it. Entering the chamber, he was about to hurl the miserable memento away into a corner, but he pulled up short, realizing he was not alone. Mercedy Ollerton stood in the shadows.
"Mistress," he said, setting the broken guard down.
"Captain, I'm sorry. I didn't mean to intrude. Your equerry let me wait here, knowing you were about to return. I wanted to see you. I wanted to apologize."
"For what?"
Loken asked, hooking his battered helm on the top strut of his armor rack. She stepped forward, the light glowing off her black skin and her long, augmented cranium.
"For missing the opportunity you gave me.
You were kind enough to suggest me as a candidate to accompany the undertaking, and I did not attend in time."
"Be grateful for that," he said.
She frowned.
There was a problem, you see. A friend of mine, a fellow remembrancer, the poet Ignace Carcassi. He finds himself in a deal of trouble, and I was taken up trying to assist him. It so detained me, I missed the appointment."
"You didn't miss anything, mistress,"
Loken said as he began to strip off his armor.
"I would like to speak with you about Ignace's plight. I hesitate to ask, but I believe someone of your influence might help him."
"I'm listening," Loken said.
"So am I, sir,"
Mercedes said. She stepped forward and placed a tiny hand on his arm to restrain him slightly. He had been throwing off his armor with such vigorous, angry motions.
"I am a remembrancer, sir,"
she said.
"Your remembrancer, if it is not too bold to say so. Do you want to tell me what happened on the surface? Is there any memory you would like to share with me?"
Loken looked down at her. His eyes were the color of rain. He pulled away from her touch.
"No," he said.